Well, hello and welcome to Module 6 of Updating Your Database Management Skills to SQL Server 2014. Yep. I'm Pete Harris.
I'm Graham Malcolm.
It's nice to see you, Graham.
And nice to see you, Pete.
It's our last module.
It is.
It's been a long course.
It has. It is. Yeah. We've covered quite a lot of ground.
And it's one of my favorite topics.
There you go. You've
known this for years now.
You get to honk your Azure horn.
Honk the cloud horn.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, as you might have guessed from that, we're going to look at SQL Server and the cloud. We're going to look at Windows Azure and how SQL Server interoperates with that. So let's go and see what we cover in the module. So we'll look at Windows Azure Storage as a mechanism for storing data in the cloud. And we'll see how that we can integrate that with our SQL Server on-premises SQL Server instance. So what we're really looking at here is different ways of managing cloud data solutions. So first of all, Windows Azure Storage is a way of interacting with storage in the cloud. Then we're going to turn our attention to Windows Azure SQL Database, which is a platform as a service solution for relational data in the cloud. So it allows us to have a kind of SQL Server-like experience for building applications that need to have a relational database in the cloud. And then finally, we're going to drill into virtual machines running in Windows Azure, where we can actually just install SQL Server and including all the other components like analysis services and reporting services, all of those bits and pieces in a virtual machine that runs in Windows Azure. So you don't need to host it in your own data center. You can have that running on the cloud. So some pretty compelling scenarios, lots of different ways that we can tackle taking data and using it, using cloud technologies with it. So let's dive right in and have a look at Windows Azure Storage. So Windows Azure, if you haven't come across Windows Azure in your IT career for this point, well, where have you been for a start? And secondly, let me just introduce what that's about. Windows Azure is a platform that Microsoft has invested a lot of effort and a lot of energy in building over the past 3 or 4 years and incrementally added lots and lots of services to there. So if you haven't looked for a while, take another look, because there are loads of cloud-based services for you, both as a platform as a service offering, so you can build solutions that are based in the cloud, and also as an infrastructure as a service offering, so you can take advantage of Windows Azure infrastructure for your virtual machines, for virtual networking. And actually, you could put your entire data center in a cloud environment that's hosted by Microsoft and not use your own on-premises infrastructure. So there's lots and lots of uses for Windows Azure. One of the most common uses in Windows Azure is just to store data up in the cloud. It might be tables of data that applications use, or maybe files that you store, and we refer to those as blobs, binary large objects that you store up in the cloud, and you take advantage of that storage that's there. It's a very cost-effective way to store large amounts of data. So what's all that got to do with SQL Server? Well, SQL Server uses storage for a number of things. We use disks, we use either local disks or SANs quite often on our infrastructure, our on-premises infrastructure. We use disks to store backups to. We might export databases as DAC packages, as data tier applications, and we need to put them on a disk location somewhere. So there's all these types of things that we use storage for. And we can actually use Windows Azure Storage for that. We can use Windows Azure Storage as a destination for database backups, for example. So I might want to backup an on-premise database, but store the backup in Windows Azure so that if I have an on-site disaster, my backup's securely stored up in the cloud. And Windows Azure Storage is replicated internally within the Windows Azure data center. And in fact, it can be replicated geographically across data centers. So I'm getting the benefit of that large-scale enterprise storage across in the cloud without me having to invest in off-site storage of my own. So that's one possibility. The other is you can actually use Windows Azure as storage for your database files. So slightly weirdly, you can have database your SQL Server instance running on an on-premise server, but when you create a database, you could put the files for that database in Windows Azure data storage. You could put it in a Windows Azure blob store. Now, there's a few, admittedly, slightly esoteric scenarios where you might want to do that. But what it does do is ease that migration to the cloud. You've already got the data files being stored in the cloud. And it's the next step would be to move the database server to there. So for scenarios where you perhaps need to keep some data on site for on-premise for compliance policy requirements, but you can have other databases that are in the cloud, it allows you to gradually start moving to the cloud. And the other approach there is that because your database files are stored in Windows Azure, if your entire site fails and your server disappears, you can bring up another SQL server and reattach the database files that are in Windows Azure to that other server in another site. So it actually gives you an element of recovery pretty quickly because the files are securely stored up in the cloud. And then the other thing we can use it for is if I want to transfer a database from one place to another, perhaps across two different sites that I have in my organization, or perhaps even from an on-premise server to a cloud-based virtual machine in Windows Azure, I can export the database as a data tier application, store it in Windows Azure storage, and then I can go and import that stored DAC file into the other server from elsewhere. So lots of flexibility to use this cloud-based storage. Pretty cool, yeah?
Yep.
So let's have a look. I'm going to show one example of how we do that, and I'm going to look at how we do a backup to the cloud. And this will give you an idea of how we can work with Windows Azure storage. So I switch to my demo machine, and I've brought up the Windows Azure management portal here. I've got a number of services up and running in Windows Azure, including some storage. So I've got a storage account here called MVA Demo Store. And if I drill into that storage account, there are some containers that I've got in there. So think of these conceptually as being a bit like volumes in a file system. And I've got a couple of things in there that I'm already using for some virtual machines. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to add a new container, and I'm going to call it backups. So I'm going to use this to store my backups. And I'm making it private, so it's a private storage account just for my use, for my organization's use. I could make it public, or I could make this container just a single public blob. But I'm actually going to keep it private and go ahead and do that. So off it goes and creates that backups container, and I can see that that now exists quite happily up there. Okay, well, so far so good. What I now want to do is I want to be able to back up my database from my on-premises SQL server and store the backup in that backups folder up there. Well, the way that I do that, I can see that the name of the database, the name of the storage here, MVA Demo Store. And what I need to do is I need some sort of way of authenticating against that. I need some kind of access key so I can connect to it. And as luck would have it, there's a button at the bottom here that says Manage Access Keys. So that seems pretty promising. If I click on that button, I can see various access keys as a primary and a secondary. They're both just used to access the database. And to access the store. So I'm going to go ahead and copy that to the clipboard. I'll just allow access. Copied that primary key to the clipboard. And because I'm going to use that now, when I go back to my SQL Server Management Studio, I'm going to make use of that key. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to actually, in my Object Explorer, I'm going to connect to Azure Storage. And what that allows me to do is to specify the storage account I want to connect to. So that was MVA Demo Store. And specify the account key that I want to use to connect to that. So if I just paste in that account key, and I'll just save that to save me pasting it again. I'll go ahead and connect. And there's my MVA Demo Store Windows Azure Storage. And if I expand my containers, I can actually see my backups folder. There's nothing in it just yet. If I expand that out, we'll see that it's empty. But I can actually see the container up there and see the contents of that store. So that's a pretty useful way of just being able to sanity check that things are where I expect them to be in my Azure store. Okay, so now what I want to do is I want to look at backing up a database. I've got a database in here called products, and I want to make a backup of that and store the backup up there in my Windows Azure storage account. Well, to do that, the first thing I need is some sort of credential that I can use to connect to my server. We've seen that I used that that key, and what I'm going to do is create a credential object in SQL Server that can be used to effectively create the connection up to the storage account. So I'm going to go ahead and find a script file that I need, and I happen to know this one is buried away in the file system in here, so I'll go and get it. And it's this one here, create credential. So what I need to do is I'm going to create a credential. I need to have some sort of identity, and that's going to be the name of the Azure storage account that I've got. So that was MVA Demo Store. And it needs a secret, and that secret is, you've guessed it, my access key. So if I paste the access key in, there it is there. And I can go ahead and run that code. I'll just actually pump this font up a bit so you can see what's going on a bit better. So it's create credential, the identity is the name of the storage account, the secret is that primary key, and I'll go ahead and run that. And that creates a credential in the master database called Azure Store. So that's what I'm going to now use when I run my code to connect to the server and do the backup. Connect to the storage and do the backup. So I'll go ahead and get my script to do a backup here. And again, we'll just bump that font up a bit. So it's a backup database statement. You've probably seen that kind of thing before. But the interesting thing is instead of to disk or to tape, it's to URL. And what I'm going to do is just specify my Azure account name. So that was MVA Demo Store. And tell it that the credential I want it to use when connecting is my Azure Store credential, which of course includes that key that I need to connect to there. And it's as simple as that. If I go ahead and run that code, I get an error because it's the wrong database. It's as simple as that. You've got to specify the right database name. We're going to back up the products database, and we'll go ahead and run that. And I get the usual kind of backup process running, and I should actually see in a few minutes that that backup has succeeded. So we'll just give it a second. And there we go. It's processed however many pages and successfully backed that up to the cloud. And I can verify that it's there if I go and have a look at my containers now and just refresh that container. I can actually see, I've called it Human Resources Backup, of course, in the file name, but that's where that file is. I've backed up a different database with that name, but it doesn't really matter. Okay, so fantastic. What happens if I actually go and delete my products database by accident? So let's go and do that. So I've deleted my products database. And what I can do is I can go and get my restore option, and I'll just bump up the font. And before I forget to do it this time, I'll change the name. So I'm going to restore database products from that location. I need my storage account name again. And again, just use the credential. So it's exactly the same as a regular restore statement, except for the from URL, and I'm specifying a credential. We'll go ahead and run that. And it just takes a few seconds to go and run and get that data and restore it to our local on-premise server. And when it finishes, we should now have a restored products database. So there we go, it's successfully restored the database. And if I go and have a look and just refresh my databases, sure enough, my products database is back. So the whole point of this is we're not moving our data to the cloud in terms of moving our database in this example, but we're leveraging the cloud as a source for offsite backup storage. And it's a pretty easy way just to be able to back up to my Windows Azure Store, and I can restore it either on the server in the event of losing the database, or in fact on a different server in the event of an entire site failure or something like that. So pretty cool, yeah?
It is pretty cool. I think Azure Storage is an interesting way to just consider it as offsite file storage in general, and they've got some cool features, like you can even ship them a hard drive.
Yeah.
If you've got a bulk upload you want to do, you can just send them physical media and get that in your Azure account that way, too.
Yeah, some pretty neat stuff there. Okay, so we've looked at the notion of having off-premise storage for our backup. What if I actually want the database to be off-premise? I actually want the database to be in the cloud. So I don't want to have to manage the database in my on-premise infrastructure. I just want to have a relational database that my application can use up in the cloud. Well, one potential solution for that is Windows Azure SQL Database. It's what was formerly known as SQL Azure. If you've heard of SQL Azure, this is the new name for SQL Azure. It's now called Windows Azure SQL Database. It's a platform as a service, or a PaaS, or PaaS solution. In other words, it's not actually giving you the infrastructure. You don't have to manage the server or manage any of the configuration of the server side of things. Effectively, it just lets you create a database and store that in a sort of conceptual server up in the cloud. So it's built on SQL Server technologies. It looks and behaves very, very similar to SQL Server. And for around about, I guess, 85 to 90% of your typical workloads, it's indistinguishable from SQL Server. There are one or two significant differences to be aware of, but in terms of actually using it as a data store, it supports a lot of the same functionality as SQL Server. So how does it work? Well, you can see in the diagram on the slide here, there's your Windows Azure subscription. And within that subscription, you will have a SQL database server, but that's really just a conceptual entity. It's not actually a server in the sense of a virtual machine or anything like that. It's just a kind of unit of management, if you like. And then within that conceptual server, you have databases. You'll have a master database, just like you do in a SQL Server instance, and then you have isolated user databases. And the isolated aspect of that is quite important. There's a a couple of things that we need to think about that are different about SQL Server versus Windows Azure SQL Database. And the first of those is security management. The way that SQL Server works is you typically have one or more administrative accounts, and they might have different levels of administrative capabilities at the server level, and then you have user accounts in the individual databases. And you have this notion of server roles at the server level and database roles within the databases that differentiate between those two different levels. Well, in Windows Azure SQL Database, it doesn't work quite as simply as that. When you connect to a Windows Azure SQL Database, you connect to a database. And you can't have queries that span across multiple databases. You can't do a use statement to switch database context or any of that. You actually have to disconnect and reconnect to get to a different database that's stored up there. They're isolated, self-contained databases. So from that perspective, they behave a bit like contained databases that we looked at in a previous module. The other thing is that you manage these things. Your administrative capabilities, your administrative privileges, are not assigned by adding people to server roles. You actually add them to database roles in the master database. So there's a slight conceptual difference. You are adding them to roles, but it's not a server role. It's a database role that resides in the master database. And in each other database has database roles that are specific to that database. So that there's a couple of key things to look at that are different. And then the other major significance is automatically we protect access to Windows Azure SQL Database with firewall rules, both at the server and at the database level. So in order to access the database, you need to be able to traverse through a firewall, and we need to permit ranges of IP addresses to connect. So by default, it's very secure. You can't actually access it directly externally. When you create the database, as you'll see, we can quite easily allow access to other Azure services. So if I'm building an application in Azure, I can easily allow access to the database, but I have to explicitly allow access to IP address ranges outside of Windows Azure. So let's go and have a look at the security overview and see what the security structure looks like. I said there's this server level, and it's conceptual. It's a conceptual server level, and we've got firewall rules at that level that allow us to specify the IP address ranges that are allowed to connect to my Windows Azure SQL Database. I've got logins, the same concept that I have in SQL Server. I've got the idea of creating logins, and I've got master database roles. I don't have server roles, so that's a significant difference. Then within the databases themselves, I've got database level firewall rules, so I can override the server rules with even more restrictive firewall rules at the individual database level and prevent access to those. I've got users, much the same as I do in SQL Server, and I've got database roles, and again, those are the same database roles that you get in SQL Server. And then at the schema and object level, when I've got tables and views and all that kind of stuff, the permissions are just the same as in SQL Server. I can grant, select, or update, or all those types of things to the different objects within there. So once I get down to the actual database schema, it becomes very, very similar to SQL Server, but that kind of security architecture above that, because of the conceptual server level rather than an actual SQL Server instance, there are some differences that you need to be aware of. Okay. A couple of options. If you're thinking of migrating an on-premise SQL Server database up to Windows Azure, into Windows Azure SQL Database, there are a couple of options for you. There's a number of ways you can do it. The easiest way, I guess, is to use the Deploy Database Wizard, and we'll have a look at that in a minute, where I can just simply point at an on-premises database and say, hey, go and move this up to my Windows Azure SQL Database. And what that will actually do is, in the background, it will generate a data tier application, a DAC package, and it will transfer that DAC package up to the Windows Azure, and then it will import that DAC passage into your Windows Azure SQL Database. An alternative to that is you could actually generate the DAC yourself. You could just export it and then load it up, copy it up to Windows Azure storage, and then import it. So you could do it in separate discrete steps rather than using the wizard if you prefer. Or, of course, you could just simply generate a Transact SQL script for your database and then run that script in Windows Azure SQL Database. So you can, you've got a number of options available to you as to how you might do this. Let's actually dive in and have a look at Windows Azure SQL Database and just see how easy it is to provision and use. So I'm going to switch back to my demo machine. I'm just going to minimize SQL Server Management Studio, and I'm going to turn my attention to SQL Database in the Windows Azure portal here. You can see I've already got one up and running, but what I'm going to do is just walk through the steps of adding a new database. So you can see I've got databases and I've got servers. And the servers, like I say, are conceptual and they get generated with a unique name. And I could either go and create a conceptual server that doesn't actually contain any databases at this point, or I could go ahead and create a new database, in which case it asks me which server do I want to put the database in, and I could create a new one. So either way, I can go ahead and do this. If I say I want to create a new database, and I've got the option of quick create, custom create, or import, I could import it from a DAC that's saved in my blob storage account. But I'm going to go ahead and choose custom create. And it's asking for a name for the database. This is the name of the actual database, not of the server. So I could say MyDB. There are different editions of SQL Server, and you find that the size limit varies, and of course the cost limit varies depending on what you do. And you could specify the size that you need. It is important to point that you pay for what you use, so that's an important aspect of this. So if you aren't using more than a gig, you're only paying for a gig. I can specify the collation, and I can choose a server. Now I've already got a server installed up there, so I could choose that one, or I could go ahead and create another SQL database server. And if I do that and move to the second step, it's going to ask me for a login name for the server. Because I'm creating a new one, it needs to know, well, who's the administrative login for that? So I could go ahead and put in a username and password to use there. And I specify a region where I want this to be stored. There are different regional data centers that Microsoft operates Windows Azure from, and you can see there's a whole bunch of regions available to me here. What I'm going to do is just simply stick with the one that I'd already selected. Southeast Asia seems good enough to me. That's where I'm going to put it. And there's an option here to allow Windows Azure services to access the server. Well, I'm going to have that selected because that's going to configure a firewall rule that allows anything else that I've got running in Windows Azure to connect to this database. So go ahead and click OK. And off goes the system and it starts creating that database. It's going to create the server, the conceptual server, and then provision the database within that server. And you can see whenever you do anything in Windows Azure, you get this kind of little icon down here that moves. It looks like an equalizer icon or a stereo or something. And it's actually done already. It's pretty quickly finished that. So I can dismiss all the completed actions. And there's MyDB. And if I select MyDB, I can drill into that and get some details about that. There's a dashboard that lets me see information about my database, because there's nothing been happening on it so far. But I can see the server name, which is usually one of the most important things I want to find out. What's the server that this is actually hosted on? And that server name was generated for me. I did not specify that. That's done for me. And again, it's listed among my servers here. So here's that server again there. And one of the first things I'm going to want to do is I'm going to want to go into that server and I'm going to want to configure it. And the configuration I specifically need to do is I need to allow access to it from wherever I need my applications or my administrative tools to be able to access. So I allowed the Windows Azure services. That's already been enabled. But I could add various IP address ranges as well. And it's already figured out this is the IP address of the machine I'm currently using to browse to here. So it says, well, hey, this is what you're at. Do you want to allow access from your existing machine? In which case I can say, yes, add that. And it will create this firewall rule that allows actually just that IP address. And if I had a range of machines in a particular network that's connected to the internet that I wanted to allow, I could create some sort of name and I could say, yeah, from 131.107.0.0 to 131. I've typed 102, so we'll go with 102.255.255. So I could do something like that to allow a range of IP addresses to connect to there if I wanted to. In this instance, I don't particularly want to do that, so we'll delete it. And when I'm ready to go and enable them, I can click Save. And off that will go and enable access for that range of IP addresses. Now, just because of the way the firewall configuration works, it can take up to 5 or 10 minutes for that actually to become valid. So I'm going to switch away from using this server now and concentrate on the one that I had already configured here. So I've now got my Windows Azure SQL database. Fantastic. That's up and running. It's ready to go. What I might want to do is actually work with that database. So if I go and have a look at this CloudDB database here, I've got that selected. One of the things I can do is I can say manage that database. And a pop-up's allowed, so I'm going to allow pop-ups from this site. And we'll just try that again. And just occasionally you will find that you get these little pink icons if the particular module didn't load. So I'm just going to switch to that and refresh the page and see if we can get rid of those. Now, one of them is not, but the others are. So we'll come back and deal with that in a minute. But if I go into my SQL databases now, here's my CloudDB, and I can go and manage that. It opens up a separate window. And from here, I can go and I can connect and manage that database. So I could put in my student and password into there. Click log on. That'll take a little while to connect to there. I might find it's not going to connect right away because of the network settings on this machine, but it has. There we go. So it's connected straight away. And in here, I can do various management tasks. So I could go ahead and create a new query, for example. And I could use that to go ahead and create a table. And just go ahead and run that statement. Nope. Oh, yeah, it would help if I typed varchar correctly. Off it goes and creates the table. So I've got a fairly rudimentary web-based interface for managing it. I can even do sort of designing stuff and go in and, again, create a new table and actually do it using these graphical tools. So there's a pretty good web-based interface for me to manage my Windows Azure SQL database. So that seems pretty neat. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, it's pretty simple, straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. But what if I'm a SQL Server administrator? Am I likely to use this? I'm probably used to using some other tool, yeah?
I think you'll probably just connect using SQL Management Studio.
Exactly what I'm going to do. So one of the beauties of this is if I go ahead and leave that page there, if I have a look at that CloudDB, and remember I said the name of the server was listed. In fact, here it is here. You notice it's that weird, uniquely generated name, .database.windows.net, and actually the port is 1433, which is the default SQL Server port anyway. So I can copy that to my clipboard. And if I now fire up Windows Azure SQL Manager, and I'll just get rid of some of these scripts that I don't need anymore from the previous demo. And what I can do is I can just go ahead and connect to a database engine. So there's nothing specific about this that makes it Windows Azure SQL database. It's just a regular database connection. But I'm going to specify the fully qualified name of the server. I'm going to use SQL Server authentication. And I had a user called student. Now, the only thing you have to watch for here is the correct way to specify the account is the username, or the login name rather, and then the server name like that. So it's student at that server. And then my password. And if I go ahead and connect using those credentials, just after a minute, there it is. It appears here. It's got a slightly different icon that tells me it's a Windows Azure SQL database. And it hasn't got all of the same folders because we don't support replication or always on high availability or anything like that. But I've got a lot of the regular sort of tools. I can manage my logins from here. I can manage my databases from here. And I can do things like create tables from here. So you might be getting really excited. I can create a table and I get the fully UI experience of SQL Server Management Studio, but you don't. Actually, because the semantics are slightly different, you end up still doing things in Transact SQL, but at least I can manage the database along with my other databases from within the Windows Azure, from within the SQL Server Management Studio environment. So pretty neat stuff. The final thing I might want to think about is, what if I've got an on-premise database here that I want to migrate up to my database server here? So again, I'm just going to go and copy that name of the server to the clipboard, just so that I have it handy. And I'm going to go and have a look at my databases that I have on-premise. And we'll take that products database that we saw earlier. And let's think about migrating that to the cloud. Now, it doesn't contain anything like SQL CLR objects or things that aren't supported. It doesn't rely on replication. There's no linked server queries or anything like that. Nothing that wouldn't work in Windows Azure SQL database. So I can go ahead, I can look at tasks, and I can say deploy to Windows Azure SQL database. And up comes my wizard, so next step. And the server I'm going to connect to is, well, it's actually already remembered that, so I just put in my password. Okay, so you can get it to remember that. And it's going to create a new database called products in the edition of SQL Server that I've connected to. So it's web edition, and I could, of course, upgrade that at this point to business edition if I need to. And it's going to actually generate a temporary backpack. It's a DAC, which comes out as a backpack because it contains the data. And that's going to be uploaded and then imported into this Windows Azure SQL database. So we'll go and move to the next step. That's everything it needs to know. So the wizard starts to export the database into a DAC. So off it goes and exports the schema, and extracts that out of the database. And after a few minutes, it will start to extract the data. Just let that run, so there we go. So off it goes and gets the data, creates the database on the target server, and success with that. So it's starting to go ahead and initialize the deployment of all the schema and the data. And that'll just take a few minutes to complete. And there we have it, operation complete. The database has been deployed to the cloud. So I can close out of the wizard. And if I actually go and have a look at my database, it's already refreshed the view, and I can see that that products database is now actually up in my Windows Azure SQL database. So, pretty neat.
And did it make a copy of it, or?
Yeah, it effectively copied that database.
It copied it, so it still exists on-premise.
Still exists on-premise as well. And if I go into here, and I could actually go ahead and script that as a select. So I'm connected to my cloud version of the database that's running in Windows Azure SQL database. And I could go ahead and run that. And all that data is up there as well.
And so I can set my application to test that data and
absolutely,
decide exactly
yeah.
how I want to convert over to using it live and those sorts of things.
Exactly. And if you've opened up the firewall port necessary from where your application is hosted, then all you have to do is change that connection string. Your application can go ahead and just start using it just like SQL Server.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, let's switch back to our slides. And we'll look at one final thing. Now, what we've looked at there is using Windows Azure SQL Database as a platform as a service solution for data. So if you don't want to have the overhead of managing the infrastructure for your database server, if you you just want to put your data in a relational structure somewhere in the cloud that's accessible, perhaps you're primarily an application developer and you don't have the kind of full-time capabilities of maintaining a SQL server, you don't have a full-time DBA, then that's a great solution. Just actually using Windows Azure SQL Database is great. It provides you with that platform. But what if you actually want to move your enterprise data up to the cloud and you want that level of control? You want to be able to control the placement of data on the files. You want to be able to control the configuration of the server. Or perhaps you want other SQL Server capabilities like reporting services or analysis services or other things that aren't supported in Windows Azure SQL Database. Well, thanks to this new capability that's only recently arrived in Windows Azure, we've got this infrastructure as a service, or IaaS capability. So we can host our virtual machines, regular Hyper-V virtual machines that you might have running in Hyper-V on-premise, you can host those in Windows Azure. So we can actually take those virtual machines and move them up to Windows Azure. Or you can create new virtual machines from a library, a gallery of templates for virtual machines that have common software configuration. And it's not just limited to Microsoft technologies. There are templates up there with variants of Linux and all sorts of different distributions that you can create virtual machines for. But there are also gallery templates for installing SQL Server pre-installed on a virtual machine image in the cloud. So it's relatively easy to get up and running with a SQL Server that's running in Windows Azure. So there's a lot of benefits of that. There's the built-in resilience of the fact that it's stored in that data center. The files in that data center are replicated, so that storage layer that we're storing our virtual machine hard disks on has a built-in resiliency there. You're getting a pretty strong solution there in Windows Azure. And of course, it gives you that flexibility of being able to have some machines in the cloud that you're hosting on Microsoft's infrastructure, and other machines that you keep on premise that you're hosting on your own infrastructure. Now, the other huge advantage, I guess, here is, unlike with Windows Azure SQL Database, where it looks like SQL Server, but it's slightly different under the covers, this is just SQL Server. So you can configure your servers to be consistent across your on-premise servers and your cloud servers. So pretty neat. Sounds pretty compelling. Yeah. So the way this works, the way that virtual machines work, if you're not used to using Hyper-V, you might not have seen this, but Hyper-V relies on virtual hard disks. And these are actually files that sit on your file system, and they contain effectively all the files that are there for the installation of the server for the virtual machine. So it's a bit like it's the disk for the virtual machine, but it's actually a file on a host disk, if you like. So we have these virtual hard disks, and when you provision a virtual machine in Windows Azure from one of the gallery templates, it has an operating system VHD that includes a C drive, where the operating system is installed, and a D drive that it uses for temporary data. So generally, when you first create a virtual machine, it has those two drives by default. You can then add additional VHDs to that virtual machine image. You can attach new storage to there, and you can put your databases on those additional disks. And in general, you want to keep your database files separate from the operating system VHD. So you're usually going to add virtual hard disks to your virtual machines, and that's where you're going to put your databases. One thing about that, actually, if you're used to using on-premise SANs or perhaps even storage pools and storage spaces in Windows Server to store your data, then you're possibly used to the idea of striping your data across multiple physical drives to get that that performance gain of striping the data. When you host your SQL Server databases in a virtual machine in Windows Azure, of course, there isn't a SAN as such. You're using virtual hard disks. So one of the techniques you can use to maximize the performance is to stripe the data across file groups. So in effect, what you can do is create multiple storage VHDs, create a file group that contains files that span those VHDs. So you've got a file on each of the VHDs. And what SQL Server does is, as it writes data to the file, it will actually proportionally fill each of the files on the different disks. So you get to split the I/O across the two virtual disks, and that can give you some performance gains. So a little tip, if you are doing that, that will give you slightly better performance. So I want to talk a little bit about the connectivity of this, because it can get a little bit complicated. What you've got running in Windows Azure is a virtual machine, and that virtual machine is, in this case, it's going to be a Windows Server installation. And it's going to have firewalls, the same as any Windows installation. It has the built-in Windows firewall. So there's firewall protection within the Windows Azure area where you're storing your database, within your cloud service. You've then got this notion of a port that you're going to connect to through a firewall on your virtual machine from within your Windows Azure cloud service. And that's great. But what if my connection is coming from outside of Windows Azure? What if I've got a client machine that's on-premise, or perhaps I'm out and about and I'm using a tablet machine or something and I'm connecting from there? So actually, there's a second layer of protection, because Windows Azure itself provides this layer of protection. So what we have is this notion of an endpoint. And the endpoint is something that someone outside of Windows Azure can connect to on a public port, and then internally, the traffic is routed to the appropriate internal port, the private port, on the virtual machine that we want to connect to. So there's a little bit of configuration that's going to be required for that. So because we're using SQL Server, if we've got a default instance of SQL Server running in a virtual machine, by default, it's going to listen on port 1433. If you're using a named instance, and then by default, it uses a dynamic range of ports, and you want to change that to use a static port just to keep things easy so you can connect. And then you're going to create an endpoint that maps an external connection to that internal connection so that you're able to support your external users. The other thing I want to talk about in terms of connectivity is how do we handle authentication and authorization? So we know that SQL Server supports Windows authentication and SQL Server, or what we used to call mixed mode, SQL Server and Windows authentication. So if I'm going to have to support Windows authentication, I want users to connect using Windows credentials, then there needs to be a Windows domain somewhere. There needs to be some sort of Active Directory with those user accounts. if all of that is happening just within Windows Azure, it's happening just within my cloud service in Windows Azure, I could actually have my domain defined in Windows Azure. So I could have Active Directory there, and then internal applications can use Windows credentials to connect to SQL Server. Fair enough?
Yep.
What if my users are external? Then I've got a problem. And the problem is I need to have Active Directory available across both my on-premise network and the network that's in my internal Windows Azure cloud service storage area there. So what I can do there is I can use virtual networks. One of the other things that Windows Azure supports is the creation of a virtual network. And I can create that virtual network, and I could then create a VPN connection to connect my on-premises network to the virtual network within my Windows Azure environment. And that lets me have a single connected network environment within which I can run Active Directory. And of course, then I can use Windows-based authentication. So if you want to use Windows-based authentication, that's how you're going to have to do it. You'll have to create a virtual network, and then you'll have to have Active Directory available across both of those subnets over a VPN. If you don't need to go to that extent, if you don't actually require Windows authentication or you don't want to go to that sort of level of infrastructure, then you can actually just use SQL Server authentication and just connect to an endpoint and specify username and password and connect from there into your SQL Server database. So there's a number of options depending on how you need to configure, what your requirements are for authentication. Okay, let's go and actually see how all of this works, and we'll get our virtual machine up and running. So I'll switch back to the demo machine. So here I am in my Windows Azure portal, and I'm going to have a look at my virtual machines. And you can see I've got a virtual machine here called MVA Demo SQL that I created earlier. But just to kind of go through the steps as to how we would create one of these things, I can go ahead and click New. And I get the option of a quick create. I could just go and create a virtual machine and customize it later. Or I can choose from a gallery of virtual machine images. And so there are a number of pre-configured images here that I can choose from, including, in this case, we've got a CTP2 evaluation of SQL Server 2014 on Windows Server 2012 R2. So, and these, of course, will be updated as products get to RTM. But there's a whole range of different images that I can choose from. And you can see it's not just Microsoft Technologies. There's a pretty substantial range of server images that you could choose from. So you don't have to do the entire install yourself. You can go ahead and select something and install it. The key thing to be aware of as well is you don't have to do it this way. You're not limited to these. You can upload your own VHDs that have installations on them and use them as well. But just to go through the steps, if I were to choose this SQL Server image here, I can go to the next step, and I have to specify a virtual machine name. Now, this doesn't have to be globally unique, so this is a name that's that I'm going to use to refer to this machine. So I could just say my VM. And I specify the size that I want to have for that virtual machine in terms of the number of cores. And of course, you pay per core. That's part of the costing of this. So you want to be careful to choose the right, something with enough power for you to do what you need to do, but you don't want to overpay for it. So I'll go with a medium-sized server. I need a username, so I could specify that, and some sort of password as well. So I can specify that. And then as I move to the next step, now here's where it gets slightly interesting. We're going to need a cloud service. So in effect, what we're doing here is we need some sort of host, some sort of fabric on which the virtual machine is going to run. Just the same as if I were building a virtual machine in my on-premise environment, it needs a Hyper-V host to run on. So we need some sort of service within which it's going to be hosted. And that does have to be globally unique. So I'd have to have some sort of unique name in there. If I type that in, and this turns out it is unique, so I could go ahead and use that. And the full name of that, in this case, would be myvmcloudservice.cloudapp.net. So that's the publicly addressable endpoint, if you like. Well, not endpoint, it's not the right word, but the publicly addressable point to get to that service. I can specify where I want to create the virtual machine, and also a storage account that I want to use. So I could use an automatically generated storage account, or if I choose an area where I already have a storage account, then I could choose that storage account. And what that's used for is as a location to store the VHD files for the virtual machine. The availability set is a way of relating virtual machines, relating effectively any services that you're using together. So they're all grouped as an availability set together. And that would allow me to effectively load balance across multiple machines and get performance that way. I'm not going to do that for my SQL Server, because it doesn't really make sense to do that with SQL Server. I then get this option to install a virtual machine agent, which is required for one or two operations, and then create some endpoints. And the default endpoints that are there, there's one for remote desktop so that I can at least get to my new virtual machine and do something with it. And there's one for PowerShell so that I could remotely use PowerShell to configure my virtual machine. And I can then add additional endpoints. So I could add an endpoint from this list for MS SQL, which automatically gives me port 1433. So I can open up that endpoint. And remember, I said the endpoint is the external connection to get into the cloud service that then gets routed to an internal port in the virtual machine itself. Or I could type in any sort of name I like and go ahead and add the whatever ports I want to add for that one. So I can add those endpoints. Then at that point, I'm ready to create the virtual machine. And it typically takes, you know, 10 to 15 minutes, depending on the complexity of the install for the image you've chosen. Now I'm going to save that time because I've already got one here and I've created this virtual machine. And that virtual machine uses a cloud service called MVA Demo. So that's the publicly accessible address will be mvademo.cloudapp.net. And within that cloud service, I've got a virtual machine called MVA Demo SQL. Okay, well, so far so good. What else might I do with this? Well, I could attach virtual disks. I could go ahead and attach a disk that I've uploaded or attach an empty disk that I'm going to start doing things with. I create databases in, for example. Or I could go ahead and connect to that virtual machine. So if I connect, it's going to ask me to use this remote desktop connection to go and have a look. And I can go ahead and connect. And I'm going to log in with the credentials that I've got on that machine, which happen to be a user called student. Go ahead and type that in. And I'll just say yes to the certificate message. And what we should now get is a remote desktop connection to that virtual machine. It'll just take a second or two to come up and log me in. And it's logged me in. This is Windows Server 2012 R2, so I can see that I've got that environment here. And I could do things like go to my local server in Server Manager, and I could configure, for example, the Windows Firewall. So I could bring up the firewall here, and I could look at the advanced settings and the inbound rules. And I've actually already been in here and created an inbound rule for SQL Server. So there's that rule that allows connectivity. We'll just have a look at what I did with that. And basically what I'm doing here is allowing connectivity on port 1433, which is what you would expect. So I've got my external endpoint for SQL Server on 1433, and I've got the firewall configured in the virtual machine itself to allow connectivity. So we'll see that, that transfer coming in. This firewall rule here, SQL Server Cloud Adapter, we'll talk a little bit more later about what this is for, but this was already configured for me. This has been created for me. And again, if I have a look at that, I can see it's on port 11435. And that's going to be important later on because it's used for SQL servers that are on-premise to communicate with SQL servers that are in the cloud. So when I go to do a deployment later on, that's a way of the wizard being able to communicate across that boundary. So I've configured my firewalls, that's fine. The other thing I've done, because I'm not going to install Active Directory and create a virtual environment here, the other thing that I've done on this server here, this virtual machine, is I've used SQL Server Management Studio. There it is there. And if I go into SQL Server Management Studio and connect to the SQL Server instance that's installed on this machine, I've actually already been in here and I've configured the authentication here to support SQL Server and Windows authentication mode. And I've created a login called student. So I'm set up now to actually be able to connect to this virtual machine remotely through my cloud service. So if I go ahead and I can actually log out of this guy, I think we're now finished with that. So I could just sign out of there. What I can actually see, if I have a look at the cloud service here, I can see that that's up and running and ready for me to go. Actually, I don't think there's anything I need to know about this other than its name. So I can see that it's MVA Demo SQL, and that's what I'm going to connect to. I was hoping to see the fully qualified name. There it is, mvademo.cloudapp.net. That's the DNS name that I'm going to connect to. Okay, so let's go and see how we do that. And what I'll do is bring up my SQL Server Management Studio here. And I'll go ahead and connect to a database server. And what did I say it was? MVA demo SQL.
cloudapp.net.
SQL Server Authentication, it was just student. Nope. Network path is not found, interesting.
That's what I thought it was called.
Yeah, let's go double check. MVA demo.
Oh,
that's what it is. There you go. MVA demo. Cloudapp.net.
That looks better.
Yeah, there we go. And off it goes and connects. And what I now get is my SQL Server. And it is a full SQL Server. It's all the things I would expect to find in my SQL Server. So I can see there aren't currently any databases in there, but I could go ahead and create one. And I get the usual SQL Server tools. So it's not like when I connected to Windows Azure SQL Database and I had to do everything in Transact SQL. This actually gives me a fully installed SQL Server instance running in a virtual machine. So there's some pretty cool stuff there that enables me to go and connect. What I'm going to do is I'm going to switch back to the slides, because the final thing we want to talk about is, well, how do I take my on-premises data and migrate it up to there? So this notion of taking on-premises data and migrating it to a virtual machine, it's becoming increasingly common for organizations to want to start migrating data to the cloud, because you can then pay for only what you're using, you can consolidate your services onto servers that are managed in someone else's infrastructure, and if you need to scale them up, you can scale them up without having to invest in that hardware yourself. So there's a lot of considerations there that give you significant benefits by doing that. There's cost savings, there's less technical requirement to actually manage the servers and so on. There are some other considerations. You'll have to think about things like compliance and security and where the database is actually hosted. So it's not just as simple as, hey, let's everybody just move all your databases to the cloud. There are definitely considerations you'll have to think about, but it's becoming increasingly common to start using cloud infrastructure. So techniques that we can use, we could export a data to your application and then import it at the other end. We could detach and attach a database. We could generate Transact SQL scripts. There's a whole range of different ways that we can migrate on-premise databases up there. And one of the most common, I guess, the quick and easy way to move data around is quite often just to backup and restore. I can backup a database and restore it onto another SQL server. And because these are both SQL servers, then that's possible. We couldn't have done that with Windows Azure SQL Database, because under the covers, they're actually different. But these are actually just installations of SQL Server. So there's no reason that doesn't work. And that's the foundation for a tool, a wizard, that's within the environment that will do this for you. There's a Windows Azure Virtual Machine wizard that will let me deploy a database by backupping and backing it up locally and restoring it up to my Windows Azure VM. Not only that, but I don't actually already need to have the Windows Azure VM. The wizard is smart enough to let me say I want to deploy that database into Windows Azure, and even if there isn't an existing VM, it can go and create one for me. It will just generate a new VM and do the entire migration. So there's some pretty clever stuff that we can see with that wizard. Now, to make that work, we needed this SQL Server Cloud Adapter service. That wizard is going to ask you to browse the SQL Server. And in the wizard interface, you browse the SQL Server instance at the other end, and you go and you choose the server you want to deploy it to and the database name and all that kind of thing. So in order to do that, in order to have that ability to interrogate the server at the other end, there needs to be some sort of connection under the covers. And what we do that with is with the SQL Server Cloud Adapter service, which is why we saw that firewall configuration earlier on. And we need to create an endpoint for that as well. And then once we've created an endpoint for our SQL Server Cloud Adapter service, we can use the wizard to do this deployment. So let's go and have a look at how we do that. And we'll switch to our cloud environment. And I'm going to go and just verify, if I have a look at my virtual machine environment up here, and I have a look at my SQL demo virtual machine, look at its endpoints, You can see I've actually already added the endpoint here for my SQL Cloud Service, and it's port 11435. That's what I'm going to connect to publicly. That's what my on-premise wizard expects to connect to. And the private port, you might remember, I already opened up that firewall in the virtual machine, is actually the same port number. So I should be good to go. I've got my endpoint already. Let's go and have a look at how we deploy a database. So I've got my on-premise database here. We'll just use the products database once again. I seem to like deploying that one, so let's go and deploy that. And the option I've got is deploy to a Windows Azure VM. So I'll go ahead and do that and choose my Windows Azure VM. So we're ready to go. Next wizard. Now, slightly annoyingly, even although I right-click the products database, it's asking me to connect and tell it that that's the database I want to deploy. So we'll just go and reconnect and say, yep, I definitely want to deploy my products database. And it's simple. To do this, I'm going to do a backup. I'm going to take a backup of that database and then upload the backup and restore it. So where do I want to put the backup? I'm going to say, just put that in D for the time being. I can put it in any folder I like locally. It's just a temporary location. We'll put it there. So now it needs to connect to Windows Azure, but to do that, it needs to actually have some sort of credentials. Now, I could have already downloaded a management certificate from Windows Azure and installed it in my local certificate store. I could choose that. Or I could download that file and import it here. Or I can actually just sign in to Windows Azure. So I'm going to do that. I'll sign in. And the temporary account I've got for this is grahamnvademo@outlook.com. Nope. Yeah, slightly more complicated than that. And I'll go ahead and sign in. And it says, well, the deployment wizard needs some permission. It needs to view your profile info and contact list. Not entirely sure why, but it appears to need that. So we'll say yes. And in the background, this is now going to download a certificate file. You'll see that prompt coming up there to download it. And then it disappears because it just downloads it transparently and imports it into the wizard. And I can see it's picked up my subscription. I've already got that listed there. So it's done everything it needs to do to authenticate me against my Windows Azure subscription. So I can now move on to the next step. And now it says, well, where do you want to deploy this to? And it's identified that I have a cloud service called MVA Demo. And in that cloud service, there's a virtual machine called MVA Demo SQL. And I have a storage account called MVA Demo Store. That's where my VHDs are going to be hosted. And if I go and have a look at the settings of that, it's asking me for a username and password to connect to MVA Demo SQL, which is the name of the virtual machine. So I'll put in the credentials for that. I have a feeling actually this might be the virtual machine credentials I need. Yes, it is. So I'm going to say student the password. That goes in and verifies that cloud service. It asks me to trust the certificate that it downloaded. And off it goes. And now it's able to connect. And of course, it's able to browse now and see what instances of SQL Server there are. And ask me what I want to call my new database. So I'll just call it products. That seems perfectly reasonable. Next step. So that's me at the end. I'm now ready to go and click finish and start the wizard. So the wizard starts validating the configuration settings and it will start the deployment. So we'll just wait for that to complete. And there we have it. So deployment is completed successfully. And if I close out of that wizard and go and have a look at my server in the cloud, if I just refresh that databases folder, sure enough, I have my products database deployed to the cloud. And if we actually go and have a look at what's in my Azure storage, because we've still got that connection there, and I have a look in my disks folder here, I can see it's actually uploaded, it's dynamically generated. One of these was already there from a previous deployment, but it's generated a new disk, a VHD, and that's where it's storing the database. So it doesn't restore it onto the C drive or the D drive in the virtual machine. It actually creates a new virtual hard disk to host the database. So pretty cool. What do you think, Pete?
I think it's really neat technology.
Yeah. So we've, in this final module of the MVA, had a look at some of the ways that we can integrate our on-premise SQL Server instance with the cloud. And we started off by looking at some hybrid scenarios where I might perhaps take a backup of my local on-premise database, but store that backup in Windows Azure storage. So I've got that off-site in the cloud backup location. And then we looked at using Windows Azure as a platform as a service solution. So we used Windows Azure SQL Database, and we were able to create a database. We had that virtual server. We saw there were some differences in the way that we manage security and so on, but it was a very easy way to get a relational database in the cloud, and we could migrate our on-premise database from SQL Server to Windows Azure SQL Database. And then finally, we saw if you want to have more control over the infrastructure, you actually want a full installation of SQL Server and all the management capabilities that goes with that, you can create a virtual machine in Windows Azure. You can either use one of the built-in gallery templates or create your own installation of SQL Server in a virtual machine. And again, there's a wizard that enables you to take an on-premise database and deploy that through to the cloud. So it's a pretty compelling story, I think. No matter how you want to approach the cloud, there's a number of ways that we can do that for our data solution with SQL Server.
And I will take this opportunity to just say that there is a full jumpstart just on hybrid scenarios with SQL 2014 on MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com, and you're welcome to check that out for a deeper look. There's actually a module on each of the things that we just talked about in our overview module. It's full of folks from the product group that built the technology, so it's a pretty good deep dive on that technology. So
great. Excellent. Yeah. So I hope it's been a useful MVA for you. We've covered a lot of ground. There's been a lot of changes since SQL Server 2008. Some of this stuff was brand new in 2014. Right at the beginning, we looked at the in-memory technologies, those in-memory tables, and we've looked at various other cloud scenarios here towards the end of the MVA that, again, are all pretty new and exciting stuff. And then we've looked at other technologies like master data services and data quality services that will enable you to manage data within your enterprise and manage the consistency of it. We've looked at high availability with always-on availability groups, which is a pretty cool way of replacing database mirroring with a more robust clustered multi-database solution. And we've looked at some of the enhancements in security before we got to the cloud. So I have enjoyed working with Pete here to present that. It's been a blast. I hope you guys have enjoyed it as well. And we hope to see you back on some more MVA sessions in the future.
Thanks for watching.